we are making an audio recording. We'll call the roll of cases. When your case is called, please orally enter your appearance for on the recording. First case being the State of Ohio versus Nathan Childs on behalf of the appellant Childs. Good morning, Mr. Blavo. And on behalf of the state.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning, Ms. Akamali. Second case for oral argument is State versus Dwayne Weninger on behalf of the appellant Varno.
Good morning,
Mr. Eagle. Good morning. And on behalf of Weninger.
Good morning, Gary Rosenhofer.
Good morning, Mr. Rosenhofer.
Another counsel.
Good morning, Your Honor.
And are you and Mr. Rosenhofer going to split it, or is Mr. Rosenhofer going to carry the load? All right. And on behalf of the appellee, Jessica Little. Okay. You know if there's going to be an appearance, but probably not. Okay. All right. We'll cross that bridge. Excuse me? Okay. All right. Okay. Then we will proceed with the first case. And in case you have not argued here before, each side has 15 minutes in which to present their argument. The appellant may reserve some rebuttal time if you'd like. If you'll indicate that to us when you come to the podium, we'll keep track of the time for you. Mr. Blauvelt, you State versus Weninger. Look like you're raring to go.
I am, Your Honor. Second.
Well, you know what? Why change the rules?
Okay.
I mean, it doesn't. I'm concerned we don't do it for anybody
only
else.
Only counsel said it. Now, Mr. Eagle, do you want to raise some rebuttal time reserved?
I will reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal, if it please the court.
Okay. And two assignments there. You may proceed.
Thank you very much. Please, counsel and the court, thank you, Your Honor, for your time this morning. The events in this case, although I know the court's familiar with them, are particularly irrelevant. We have a criminal defendant who was indicted for facts relating to their qualifications to hold a public office. The facts of that case are public because there's a reported decision authored by a common pleas court judge reciting exactly what the facts were and things and the particulars and denying a motion basically for a directed verdict or a judgment of acquittal. Jury finds that defendant not guilty, who is Mr. Weninger. And then he moves to seal the record, which includes a transcript of the sworn testimony at the trial presented against that public official, as well as the documentation and the evidence presented against that person. The state, ex rel, Mr. Varno, moves to open that evidence up for the purposes of proving to this court in a related action, which is pending before this court, a petition for a writ of quo warranto to challenge that person's qualifications to run for or to hold that office. And in the context of that, moves the Common Pleas Court to unseal those records so that that sworn testimony and that evidence can then be presented and used on a factual basis in a collateral but related civil proceeding. Now, during the course of those events, it is determined and found out accidentally that not the same judge that was previously assigned to the case, who was assigned from out of the county, but the regular Common Pleas Court judge of Brown County was assigned to the case to make a decision on that motion, and it was determined in a public advertising that that judge had in fact contributed money to Mr. Weninger's family, and his wife puts a newspaper advertisement and said thank you to the judge, along with a lot of other people, for the financial contributions to the medical bills, and so that judge is requested to remove himself from the case. And the outcome of that, Your Honor, is that within days of filing of the motion to unseal that record, which challenges that person's right to keep his job, within days, without any substantive opposition to the motion at all, the Common Pleas Court judge overrules and turns the motion down. Not based upon a weighing of public versus private interest, but as the decision itself states, based only on the fact that Dennis Varnow is not one of the individuals listed in the sealing statute as a person that can move to unseal the record. So you have the judge under those circumstances, that kind of public advertising of the connection between the judge and the spouse of one of the litigants, without any opposition, without any
type of... Did the Supreme Court Chief Justice address that?
After the fact, and the addressing of it was, it's too late, the judge had already made a decision.
So why not file an affidavit of bias and prejudice before the fact instead of a motion to recuse? Because you're asking us to do something that there's absolutely no provision for.
I don't agree with that, Your Honor.
Well, tell me where in the disciplinary rules, the rules of conduct of the judiciary, that there's any process to do this other than to file an affidavit of bias and prejudice and let the Ohio Supreme Court and the Chief Justice make that decision. Mm-hmm. Because you're now asking us to come back in behind what the Chief Justice did.
Similar to the process, Your Honor, that I think was used to remove the Virginia judge in the United States Supreme Court.
Well, we're talking about in Ohio. What's the process in Ohio to have a judge step aside when there's an allegation of bias and prejudice?
First of all, the statute for bias and prejudice, as Your Honor knows, lists certain criteria. If it's not one of those criteria, then that statute does not apply at all.
My question was, why not file the affidavit of bias and prejudice with the Chief Justice before the fact rather than after the fact, so we don't have this discussion?
Well, Judge, except that in this case, the motion was decided, and no one was told that it was decided, and it was put in a sealed record. And then, at the same time the motion for recusal was filed, Judge, the affidavit of bias and prejudice was filed with the Supreme Court. We didn't know it, but the decision had already been made. And the Supreme Court says, I'm not going to address whether there's actual bias or prejudice or not. It's already too late because the decision has been made.
Do you know what judge is going to hear when you submit it?
Absolutely no idea. No idea whatsoever, Your Honor. There will see nothing in the record that says anything about that a new judge was assigned to the case. It was the regular common pleas court judge instead of a visiting judge as was before, that there would be any submission date, any hearing date. It was decided without any written opposition of any kind by any person, and then the decision was sealed so that the litigants weren't even told, at least we weren't told, what the decision even was. And my authority, Your Honor, to do that is the United States Constitution, which says that litigants are entitled to due process of law, and the United States Supreme Court has said that. And you don't need a statute to invoke the constitutional right to due process of law, which we all learned as a first-year law student.
So your position is any time that you or any other attorney contributes to a judicial campaign, that judge should never hear any of your cases?
I think that's what the United States Supreme Court said in that Cafferty-Cole case, if I'm pronouncing the name
correctly. So, again, that's your position that you espouse today. Is it any lawyer or any party that ever...
I'm not so sure I can say that regarding lawyers, but a litigant I think I can. If it's so closely timed to be contemporaneous with, it's publicly advertised, it's somewhat unusual, and it's at the time the decision is being made, that there's a due process, not only for the appearance, Your Honor, that one of the litigants is going to get a fair shake on the determination, but also, as the Ohio Supreme Court stated in the case I quoted in my brief at page 2, that you don't risk that human weaknesses and human factors are going to play into making an unbiased decision on a substantive issue. And when you combine that, and I can't say, Your Honor, to an absolute, every time $1 is given to a judge, that the other side of the case is going to be unfairly determined on the case. But when you have a public advertisement by a litigant's wife that there's a financial contribution, the decision is made within days of filing the motion. Before anybody can, there was no written opposition of any kind, no hearing, no announcement, no assignment, and then they sealed the decision so you don't even know what it is. There's just something wrong with that from an appearance point of view, and that what implicates due process of law.
Was there anything in the record indicating when this contribution was made?
Only what we filed attached to the motion, Your Honor, which was a copy of the newspaper advertisement,
right,
and didn't get any farther. Because, by then, in fact...
You said the contribution was made within days. We don't know that.
I don't know that I meant to say the contribution was made within days. I think I meant to say it was made in a period of time that was very contemporaneous with the motion being pending. I'm looking at the motion, and the attachment says it was May 31st, 2009, when it came out in the newspaper. The motion was filed June 25th, as far as recusing the person is concerned. And so, I would consider there's some contemporaneousness there. Now, if I contributed to a judge's campaign 10 years ago, obviously there's a line to be drawn, and every case is different. But the point being is that when the United States Supreme Court says that due process means you don't even have the appearance of a financial connection between one of the litigants and the judge should do something about that. And if we find out about it before we can properly invoke an affidavit of bias and prejudice, there has to be a remedy. And the remedy can't be the affidavit, because as I said in the brief, Your Honor, that means that encourages judges who have biases and prejudice, either real or risk, to rush to make the decision that they should not be making. And you can't possibly want to encourage a judge that may be biased and prejudiced or have the appearance of it rush to make the decision before anybody can do anything about it, which absolutely defeats the entire purpose of the rule, Your Honor. And I don't think that the statute can possibly be the only way to raise that constitutional right to due process of law. I don't know how it could possibly be that. Now, Your Honor, of course, those issues are moot if we get to the merits of the decision. That is, should, in fact, the records have been unsealed regardless of who made the decision. And here you obviously have a situation where there's a weighing, is supposed to be a weighing, although if you look at the judge's decision, he didn't know such thing as a weighing of public versus private interest. He said Dennis Varnow is not one of the individuals listed in the unsealing statute, therefore there's nothing I can do for him. And I, again, do not believe that that is a proper way of invoking and applying the constitutional right that the public has. Like every newspaper case you ever see, State X Rel Enquirer or State X Rel Dispatch or State X Rel Plain Dealer has come in to get public records opened up when they've been previously sealed. There can't possibly be a way to insulate the rest of the public from being able to get public information.
In your initial filing with the court, the motion to unseal, did you raise the constitutionality of this statute in your motion?
At that point, I would say that it was at least raised by implication if you read it carefully. But at that point in time, there was no indication by any person that there was a constitutional issue. If I would have known that the judge, that if there was a brief in opposition, Your Honor, that said you're not one of those people, well, that would put it in issue. It wasn't expressly an issue, but I think if you read the motion, it indicates that the rights, even if it doesn't use the word constitution, the rights involved are the public versus the private interest, which is exactly the constitutional right at issue.
Well, if it wasn't brought to the trial court's attention that they needed to address the constitutionality of the statute, how do we have jurisdiction to review it?
Like I said, Your Honor, I think that by specifically citing and quoting that the issue before the court was the public's interest versus the private interest raises the constitutional issue. I haven't read the motion lately. I think it was very clear to that effect. Then if someone opposes it, you might also say, well, if nobody opposed it, then what's the judge doing deciding an issue on an issue that was not brought before the court? And how is that preserved? I mean, you let a judge decide an issue on something that was not raised. How can you then say, well, you didn't defend it because it wasn't raised? That's the whole point of sealing the judge's decision without telling anybody about it. It didn't let anybody know what was going on or what the issues were, and there was no opposition to it by any person. It was a rush to a decision without the merits having been able to be properly addressed, which beside the point, though, it appears to me as obvious as anything can, that when a person is holding a public office that is probably, or possibly, I'll even go possibly, illegally being held by that person, that person cannot then use a statute to hide the evidence that may be relevant to proving that by using a statute that has exceptions, and the case law is all full of exceptions about you've got to weigh the public versus the private interest. What more public interest could there be than making sure our elected officials are properly holding that office? What possible? And what possible private interest could there be when it's already a matter of public record by a reported decision? And I see
that. Some of your other time?
I'll reserve the remainder of my time, Your Honor, for rebuttal. Thank you very much.
Mr. Rosenhofer.
May it please the court, counsel. Sheriff Winans, you're used to following Mr. Gregory around. I apologize if anybody was offended.
It's just the rules we have.
The first and foremost factual point to be made is that this is a situation not where money is coming to the judge, not even for a campaign purpose, but it's going from the judge and his wife to the sheriff's wife for purposes of defraying medical costs for cancer treatment. I think we can all agree, or we will all agree, that in Ohio, the Supreme Court of Ohio governs the bar and the judiciary. the Supreme Court of Ohio has adopted hybrids of the ABA Model Code of Judicial Conduct. Code of Judicial Conduct number 2.11 sets forth the specific instances where a judge is to disqualify him or herself. This situation is not in one of those categories. It's 2.11A, 1 through 7. It doesn't have any implication at all, and I think the panel has hit upon that. The fact that I may have contributed to any member of this panel, more importantly, Mr. Varnow may have contributed, Mr. Eagle, or Mr. Gregory, for campaign purposes, doesn't disqualify any judge. The fact is, the Ohio law and the Ohio standard is quite clear. Due process isn't the question. The question is the judge presumed to be unbiased and impartial and to follow the law? And that answer is yes. And the standard set forth in the George case is, absent a compelling basis or reason, you can't overcome that presumption of a lack of bias or prejudice or the fact that you won't the panel or a judge won't follow the law. That's the bottom line with regard to that aspect. And I think the court accurately hit upon the issue of waiver, which we addressed maybe inarticulately in the brief. That is, the forum for the resolution of these kinds of issues would be the Supreme Court. That's statutory. The Supreme Court governs the bar. And that's that. With that said, substantively, with relation to the issue of whether a sealed record should be opened, the issue is standing. Mr. Varnow has no compelling interest here with regard to opening this record. I don't want to short shrift this, but cutting to the bottom line, and it's in the brief, the Board of Elections made the determination as to Sheriff Wenninger's qualifications in 2000, in 2004, in 2008. The Supreme Court of Ohio has held that the Board of Elections determinations as to qualifications of candidates, whether that is residence, substance, or whatever, is entitled to great deference. In fact, in a case decided in November, the Ohio Ex Rel Tremel versus Erie County Board of Elections, they once again upheld the determination of the Erie County Board of Elections based upon its fact-finding that Tremel was not a resident of Kelly's Island, that the issue was raised judicata, had been previously determined by the board. His reurgence a second and third time around didn't change the issue of raised judicata absent changed facts, and there are no changed facts. Now, the one thing that Mr. Eagle states accurately is that the trial was a public proceeding. That's a fact. And that there, and for that reason, Mr. Varnow has ample and adequate resources or abilities outside opening this sealed record to get whatever information he needs.
Mr. Eagle says, but there's a motion pending to unseal the record in a companion case that's in front of this court, filed on behalf of the appellee in this case. Is that accurate or inaccurate?
Filed on behalf of us?
Yes.
No.
Okay.
We didn't. We filed no motion to open the record.
Maybe I misunderstood. I'm having a hard time understanding today.
We have steadfastly stood that the record should be sealed. And the principal isn't just Sheriff Wenninger, Dwayne Wenninger. The principal is anybody who has a sealed record. The point is, the press was at the trial. As Mr. Johnson said, we have a packed house here today. I can tell you, as one of the participants in that trial, and I won't commit the misdemeanor four of going behind the sealed record, but it's one of the few times, one of the half a dozen times in my public career, where we played to a full house. That courthouse was packed. There are ample sources to find whatever information that he desires to find by talking to the press, by going back to the archives at Channel 12 and Channel 9, by going to the sources that they've already subpoenaed Deuce's tape,
Help me with the chronology of this case. The original motion to unseal the record was filed when?
The original motion was filed
May 15th.
May 15th.
Then apparently the judge rules on it on May 20th. The allegation is without notice to anyone. And then something occurs that causes everybody to take a step back and start over again. Correct? When it becomes known that no notice was sent to the appellant.
I think that's accurate.
When does that occur?
That occurs...
And how, under what circumstances? Because what I'm trying to find out is, Mr. Eagle says he didn't have time to file an affidavit to bias some prejudice, but apparently that first motion, that first decision somehow was set aside because it's ruled on again on July 2nd. So from May 20th to July 2nd, what occurs that changes the circumstance of this case to prohibit Mr. Eagle from filing an affidavit to bias some prejudice between May 20th and July 2nd?
I don't believe anything occurred that prevented it, because that's a positive act. They could have undertaken that act at any time.
Well, what happened? How did this motion, how did this decision come to be decided a second time?
I think what happened very practically, and this is my guess, is the clerk had taken that, and because the record had been sealed and the record was remained sealed, simply placed it in the sealed record, put the record back on the shelf. I think it's as simple as that, a clerical error.
But that becomes public knowledge, as far as the appellant is concerned, subsequent to that May 20th decision by the court.
I'm going to suspicion that Mr. Eagle became anxious about where the what was going on with the case and appeal times and things like that, and it caused an inquiry to occur. I was not involved. We were not involved in any respect. The question becomes, is there an entitlement to a hearing on an application? I would suggest that there's not an entitlement to a hearing on an application. It's just that, an application. An application can be ruled on at any time. Assume that I apply for a temporary restraining order or a preliminary injunction. If you look at it, if it comes to you as the equity judge, and you look at it and you say, well, you're not entitled to that, I'm going to overrule it. And it was recently done in some court that received publicity. The fact that an application is made doesn't mean a person's entitled to a hearing upon that application.
And there's no, that issue's not before us. So whether or not he was entitled to a hearing.
I'll suggest to you that there is a waiver issue as to the first part of their complaint, their first assigned error, that is their court of jurisdiction is the Supreme Court of Ohio, and I also suggested that when push comes to shove, getting Judge Gusfar was right on the standing issue. The statute is very specific as to who has standing. Mr. Varnow is not one of those people. But beyond that, if you get to the substance of it, the issue is raised judicata because Sheriff Wenninger's qualifications have been determined time and time and time again by the body that's charged with protecting the public interest, the Board of Elections.
Under the circumstances of this case, is this a public record? It's a matter, Mr. Eagle says it's a matter of great public interest, and therefore this becomes a public record. Is it a public record?
When you're saying this...
The documents that were sealed, the records that were sealed, is it a public record?
Absent this court ordering that the record be opened, it is not a public record.
Why not?
Because
it's a matter of great public interest, as he argues. Why isn't it a public record? I mean, we have the Heath case out of the Ohio Supreme Court where the record of the preliminary hearing was sealed.
That's correct.
In the Valet, I can't pronounce the name, in that case, the multiple murder case, the judge sealed the record of the preliminary hearing. The Supreme Court said, set it aside. It is a public record.
The difference was the case was still pending, I believe. In other words, the case was now in the process, still pending. The preliminary hearing being at the municipal court or county court level, I think the murder case was still pending.
Now, the question is it or is it not a public record? If as he argues, it's a matter of great public interest, does that transform it into a public record?
only if you find that it is a matter of great public interest and then order the record open. The record is sealed. You, this panel doesn't even by statute, is not allowed to have access to that record. That's the statute. I can't get to it. As a lawyer, I don't talk about it because it's sealed. It's a crime to disclose information behind a sealed record. The fact that they allege that it's of great public import is simply that, an allegation. That doesn't make it a matter of great public import. No more than my brief and certification to the Supreme Court of Ohio, where I allege something's a matter of great public import, makes it a matter of great public import. I've certainly been turned down on that argument quite a number of times. So I think it takes some judicial finding that it's a matter of great public import. I don't believe that there's a balancing test that comes into play. Thank you.
Mr. Eagle?
Thank you very much. To clear up some timing, Your Honor, the newspaper article that was used as evidence of this financial connection between the litigant and the judge was reflects by the author that this financial situation was on May 9th of 2009. We filed our motion to unseal the record May 15th of 2009. The judge turned it down May 20th, 11 days after the financial contribution was made. It was put in the newspaper May 31st of 2009, and then things went kind of downhill from there.
He makes a point. This isn't somebody giving the sheriff money. This is the sheriff making a charitable-type contribution.
Correct, right? I can't say, but the point of giving money to each other, I mean, I can give money to a financial contribution to a judge. I'm not bribing that judge. That doesn't necessarily mean that the judge is going to make a decision that they wouldn't otherwise make. If a judge gives money to somebody, it doesn't necessarily mean the judge is going to make a decision somewhat more favorable to that person. But it's the appearance that there is a financial contribution, a financial connection, some type of a personal relationship between an unbiased judicial officer, allegedly, and a litigant before the court is what makes it bad. I don't think it makes a difference which way the money goes, Judge. If you look at what the United States Supreme Court said, they won't say only when a judge is the one receiving the money that it makes a difference. I don't think that that's a material distinction, Your Honor. One thing I have to mention, or I'm going to explode, is there's nothing in the evidence, and it never happened, that the Board of Elections ever made any decision saying this person was qualified for this office. It's a misrepresentation of history. The only time it was ever challenged was by one person who withdrew their challenge. The only other time it was ever challenged, the board says, well, you can't challenge it because you're not of the proper political party. Never has there ever been a determination that this person was ever qualified to hold or run for this office on the merits. There's always been procedural entanglements gotten in the way of getting to the truth. And this is one of the things that we're trying to put a stop to, is to get to the truth about that situation. More importantly, you're not going to find anything in this record which says that there's any judgment of any kind that is binding on whether this person is qualified or not to hold this office. You're not going to find any of that. That's bringing stuff outside the record into this courtroom and into this decision that I don't think that you can make. Your Honor, I've mentioned, I'm not going to repeat it, on page 6 of my brief, I've cited to the numerous cases where a couple of situations where I think what Judge Bresser was alluding to is where Mr. Wininger's counsel in his briefs have referenced that sealed record and the outcome of it and the proceedings of it, which in combination with a reported decision in the Ohio Miscellaneous Reporter indicates there is absolutely no private interest of Mr. Wininger whatsoever to keep the facts secret, only wants to keep the evidence that led to a grand jury indictment and a common pleas court saying that that the directed verdict was being overruled is what is now in that sealed record. Everything else is in the public forum. It's only the evidence to prove it.
Do you want to enlighten me about the chronology that I asked Mr. Rosenhofer about?
Judge, if I can mention, I've also stated the standard for standing in my reply brief. I'm not going to repeat it to the court. On my page 5 of my brief, I've recited the cases why a criminal proceeding is a public record. And so I won't bother the time. That Valet case that Judge was talking about, the guy was dead, I think, when all that came about, so the case wasn't pending. The chronology, Judge, is outside of the record. I'm happy to tell you what happened. We found out through an inadvertent email that the prosecutor in Brown County had been told a decision had been made on our motion. We did not know anything about it. There was some ex parte, we believe, communication about that.
So what did you do in response?
Judge, in response to finding that out, we filed a mandamus action in this court to compel the Common Pleas Court to release to us the decision on our case.
When?
Within a few weeks.
I need a date.
I can look it up for Your Honor. I've got the brief right here.
Because something generated a second entry.
You're correct, Judge. And I think it was sometime around the first, around July. Thank you very much. He says July 11th. I'll take his word for that. But there was a mandamus action filed. Common Pleas Court judge was served with it. We said, you better tell us what the decision was on our case.
His entry is signed July 2nd.
Yes, and it was within days, or I would suggest within a few days prior to the filing of that second entry, that when he got the mandamus petition, I think they decided, you know, we really can't keep a secret from somebody what we decided on their motion, and then he redid the entry. And as your court, it's in this case where I filed the motion to permit a delayed appeal because we didn't know anything about the first decision. I was concerned someone was going to say you ran out of time. All that is a moot point. What's not a moot point is we're trying to get to the facts and we want the court to let us do that. And there's no private interest that should outweigh that. And I think everything else is on the record. And Your Honor, I ran out of time. I appreciate your time this morning.
All right. Thank you. The court will take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision. Nothing further. Mr. Bailiff, you may adjourn the court.
Thank you.